Right. Welcome to the November 20th, 2019 Appalachia Quilt Community Call. The call is being recorded, and head on over to the Appalachia Quilt Wiki. There will be a meeting notes page, and you can read the antitrust policy and code of conduct on there. And while we're going, I'll kind of be taking notes on over there as well. Not a huge agenda for today's call. Wanted to just do some quick introductions. Looks like there's maybe Neil is, or two Neils, but one of the Neils is newer since we've had some other newer members. So maybe we can just go around real quick and introduce ourselves and then we can continue on. I'll start. I'm David Fueling. I'm one of the maintainers of the Quilt Project. Currently work at Spring, which is a division of Ripple, and we're focusing on Interledger.
Me and Simpson, and I work on David's team at Ripple, working on the Java projects that we have.
All right, I'm Neil Hartner. I'm David's protege, working on the Interledger team, Java. Been involved for about 2 months now.
My name is Neil Jubainville. I run a company called Orbital Software up here in Canada. We're building a enterprise ERP platform and interested in connecting the Java ILP connectors to our actual double entry ledgers for accounting.
Cool. Vidya, do you want to go briefly and just introduce?
Sure. Hi, I'm Vidya Kumar, and I'm part of the data team at Ripple. And I'm just listening in. I've been pretty fascinated with this ILP, and I've been just listening in to the meetings to see what's going on and get a feel for what's happening.
Cool. Thank you all. That's everybody on the call right now. Neil, I, in terms of agenda, I'd like to leave room to hear just more about what you're working on and see how the rest of us might be able to help you. We might be able to give you some pointers to like example code or whatnot for Quilt, and then talk to you about some of the Spring testnet work that we're working on. So we could maybe have that on the agenda, and then wanted to speak briefly about just some of the issues in the Quilt repo. And if there's time, maybe we can discuss the Java connector code base as well. But Neil, is that something you would be able to talk to at all or interested in talking about? Or
Yeah, we could certainly do that. If you're talking to me, we could maybe just classify me as Neil J.
Is that helpful.
Okay? Okay. So I can kind of give you guys a brief background. So I've been building this business platform for almost 15 years, and it's very functional. It does a lot of things like order processing and inventory management, all sorts of things, right? And so as the business developed, I kind of figured that we would kind of move into blockchain and get into smart contracts and kind of contractual binding orders and processing and logistics. And I've kind of since put that on the shelf to actually think about, this concept about the internet of money and the internet of value, and thinking that, okay, there's a lower hanging fruit just to grab by being able to transfer this value around. And because we build our own double entry ledger, like a full accounting ledger, that's tied to all these other business modules that has the ability to log transactions, what my theory is that, I need a way to bridge that ledger for these multiple types of value stores, to the internet. And there's so many blockchains out there, obviously, right? doing something abstractly through Interledger seems to me to be the best strategy to move forward. We're a very small company. Right now we're, we kind of grow and up and down depending on what projects and stuff that we do. So you're always capital constrained when you have these types of strategies. But it's a longer term vision to do something like this. And that's why there's some effort being made.
Cool. Do you guys, is your project more like a siloed network where it'll just be the people kind of participating, but not necessarily open to the broader intranet or interledger? Or are you looking for like an open kind of connectivity?
No, I think, so to answer the first part of that question is, conventionally, we've been working with just enterprises, so we'll go in and sell some slice of technology and implement it for them, and then we try to scale out some slice or part of the stack as a SaaS service. We're not always successful with that because it's hard to reach the enterprise market if you don't have marketing dollars. Mm-hmm. But the goal is to wrap up our technologies and actually take advantage of delivering them to a wider open internet. And that may involve us open sourcing a huge amount of our technology and then using smart contracts and things like Interledger to be able to grab some portion of payment for ourselves, for our efforts and our intellectual property that we've created.
Cool.
That's the strategy. We'll see how far we get.
Yeah. I'm welcome to the, or not welcome. You've been around a while, but I'm glad you're interested in Interledger and looking to like incorporate that into your work. So.
Yeah. And I see that you guys have a great dedication to the work that's been going on for the Java connector. There's other parts that are very interesting to me, which are the streaming. So I'll probably look at connecting our payroll and all that kind of stuff to real-time streaming.
Cool. Yeah, so in Quilt, and I'll put a link here, we have a nascent examples page, but our Send Money example uses a stream sender and a stream receiver that's actually operating inside of our test net to send a streaming payment. I'll throw the link there in the chat. But from Java, you should be able to at least initiate a streaming payment to the testnet, or if you have your own connectors running, whether they're Java or Rust or JavaScript, it should be able to receive those a payment from Quilt. Quilt is the sender. But inside of Quilt is also a stream receiver. It's called a stateless stream receiver, so it's not super intelligent. It's just going to fulfill every packet that you send to it. But if you were in the Java space and you wanted to build like an application that could receive streaming money, you could start there with that streaming receiver, and then as packets come in, kind of react to them. That could be like bumping a balance or collecting money somehow at the interledger layer, and then at some point, if it's going to be a payroll application, maybe you initiate some kind of payroll activity based on incoming money.
Yeah, that sounds like a good place to start. A simple component to stand up and receive those on a port.
Cool. And as always, we're in the Java channel in the Interledger Slack. So you can always post messages in there, or we all kind of look at the other channels too. So one way or the other, if you want to need help or questions or whatever, feel free to grab us in there too.
Okay, I will definitely do that. I'll reach out, and you guys may be sorry that you invited me.
Awesome. Well, if we're sorry, that means we've got good activity going. So
yeah,
it's a good problem to have.
No, that sounds good. Like I'm definitely familiar with the concepts and read the specification and understand where my integration points are. I think the part for me is I got to figure out, well, what's the method to integrate this? Like, I've got, you know, large code base right now, you know, chunks of it are, you know, referenced in Maven, other legacy components are not. So I have to figure out, you know, what's going to be the method to kind of pull down this code consistently and make sure it's updated and pulled into my project and, you know, trusted in that sense.
Great. To that end, we recently had our 1.0, so we are publishing Quilt, and eventually we'll publish the Java connector code into Maven Central. But on the front page, you should be able to find the Maven coordinates for at least the Quilt libraries. So those should be working as you would expect.
Okay.
Cool. Anyone else have any thoughts on what, or questions for Neil, or thoughts in general on sort of the broader network? If not, we can move on to some of the issues in Quilt, but happy to hear if someone does. All right. Moving on, Quilt is, we have a 1.0 out. We actually have a 1.0.1. We had a small patch release. So in GitHub, in the issues, I'll paste a link here in the chat if anyone wants to see. I've been collecting what I conceive of as like patch issues, so things that won't necessarily break the API contracts for a Quilt 1.0. And for things that maybe would break that contract, I've been sort of putting those into a 1.1 grouping using a GitHub label. So right now there's four kind of smaller issues. One is a bug in the simple stream sender. So it's basically ignoring any errors from its peer and just kind of retrying infinitely. At least that was this bug was actually filed in the Rust implementation, and I built the Java implementation very closely based on the Rust implementation. So small assumption that we also have this bug, but I'm pretty sure that we do. So there's a ticket to at least investigate that and fix that if that's the case. I'm curious if anyone has any like thoughts about what the stream sender should do if it gets 400 errors. Like, you know, usually a 400 error is either your auth credentials are wrong or you've sent some kind of invalid request. So I'm tempted to say, like, if you get one of them, the stream sender should stop immediately. But maybe there's a case to be made to try that a few times, and then I guess same question for 500 errors. In that case, those are generally more temporary, so maybe there should be some kind of back off or something. Ian or Neil, if you guys have an opinion there on what a stream.
I mean, I agree that anything in the 500 range typically should be an exponential back off, because you're probably not doing yourself any favors trying to just browbeat it into giving you a valid response. The 400 one is, I mean, it's a bit more situational, right? Because anything in the 400 range could have a fairly broad spectrum of what could be wrong. For example, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, 401 or something like that, if you know, your auth is screwed up, then it's probably something that's dangerous to retry too frequently, because, or it's something that, you know, you probably want to fail in such a way that there's greater attention brought, because you know, it's maybe something you want to fix before there's some kind of lockout or something like that. So 400s seem a little bit trickier to have kind of a catch-all for.
Yeah.
The 500s, I definitely agree. Like, exponential back off is probably the way to go.
Yeah, so I'm going to add some notes into the issue here. But so I largely concur. Like, so 5XX errors, some sort of exponential back off. We also have the timeout of the overall, like, send money call. Do you guys think, is that enough here? Like, in the Rust implementation, almost seems like maybe they didn't have a timeout on that call at all, because the way that bug report read, it was like it would just keep trying forever.
So when you, maybe I'm probably not super.
I think you're muted.
Agreeing with the finer details. When you say timeout, do you mean the amount of time it will retry for, or the amount of time it'll wait on a specific connection, or?
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think, Neil, you filed this and did some work on the send money call, but if memory serves, the timeout was like for the send money call itself. So if call send money and the timeout is like 30 seconds, then that call will abort after 30 seconds. So I don't think we're going to...
That's correct. It's the total... If it takes you, if you have to send 1,000 packets and it takes you more than 30 seconds to send all 1,000, then you'd hit that timeout.
Yeah. So unlike the Rust implementation, we're not, imagine we got 400 errors forever. We would not, like, eventually we'd hit our timeout.
Right. Yeah, that's what's happening right now. When I've been hitting those auth errors, is that you get bad username and password over and over. And then after 30 seconds, it gives up. So it's at least a good backup for now.
Okay. And I guess rereading this ticket in particular, it's pretty limited to the 4XX family. So the ticket says give up immediately since 4XX is not retryable. Like, I think that sounds fine to me.
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, any 4XX error... abort immediately. How should we abort? Like, is it, should we just return the send money result that has like no packets sent, and, or should that be an exception?
I can't remember what we're doing there, but I would think an exception.
Okay.
So I was just wondering, how do you expect the client to actually deal with this again? Do you expect the client to issue the request for send money once and then completely forget about it and hope that it works? Or do you actually want to send a response back to the client who initiated the request, telling them that, okay, the request has completely failed, you need to retry one more time?
Yeah, definitely there will need to be some, what you call the client, there will need to be some software that is orchestrating the stream layer in the way that it wants to. So in some sense, the stream layer is like a basic TCP stack, right? Like, to use the internet analogy. And something needs to be like managing, like, okay, I see that I only got a few packets through, what should I do? Or I see that this failed entirely, what should happen? So definitely there's some sort of higher layer component that should be calling send money here. I think we could definitely build something like that or augment what's here, but I think in my mind there's like a little bit of a unknown, like it's unclear if every single use case should handle this the same. So for example, there may be a use case where you need to get a payment immediately, and like getting a 4XX should not be retried for some reason. But in the normal case, it probably should be retried. Like, if you're calling send money, you want the money to work. So the other rub here is like a 400 error is like retrying is probably not going to help you. It's likely there's a misconfiguration. So, you know, some systems may be able to like try a different account perhaps, or do some sort of automated reconfiguration, and other systems won't. So there's a lot of unknowns, I think, right above this caller.
So I retract my suggestion that it would be an exception. I think it should be, because we already have it where it will return a Boolean same whether the payment was successful or not, because it's possible that it does a partial payment and then it hits a 400. That would be unlikely. It is possible. So you'd want to know that it wasn't successful, but here's how much was completed. We should just have an error message on that result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. We really shouldn't be getting transient 4XX errors, right? Like,
you shouldn't, okay. But you never
just
know.
Just in case.
Just to be consistent, right? Like, even from... either they should catch an exception or they should be trained to inspect the response object for the result.
Yeah, I guess where I was going wasn't trying to say we should throw an exception, because I think we should not. Like, this is the right return. I guess I was thinking...
Yeah.
If you get a spurious 4XX, given that we don't expect them, should we retry one time or two times? Or is it?
We could, yeah. I think either way, there should be also like a retry limit, because even if it's a 500, and if they set the limit to infinite, you probably shouldn't retry forever.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so, go ahead. Thinking that there should be some sort of retry limit as well. Like, take for example, someone's got, like, I'm thinking about the server side and, you know, a web service that's load balanced, and then, you know, some set of nodes in the pool are not able to operate properly. So when you reconnect, you're coming to maybe some common point for that socket connection, but it's getting routed in the background. Do you know what I mean? To another set of pool of nodes that might be, shooting out 400s, right? Mm-hmm.
So is the consensus here that we should definitely have exponential backoff, but we should maybe have a limit condition, or should we have one or the other?
You should probably have both, because there's... I mean, you have the, like the obvious server consideration of like, there's a concern for, as far as exponential backup goes, there is a concern from the server side, right? And that you don't want to get slammed with people retrying you, because they're probably just going to make a bad problem worse. But in terms of having both exponential backoff and a ceiling on the number of times you can do it, there's also just a client behavior concern as well, in that if someone is using this as a client and you're just retrying forever to a system that's down, there's also, you could pass a cascading failure back up into the container that's running that client, because it just starts consuming resources on the system trying to hit some kind of back end that's never actually going to respond to it. So you just have, you know, all of these threads that are firing off on some given interval. If you have that happening indefinitely and there's a long-term outage to whatever it's connecting to, it can cause collateral damage. So there probably should be some kind of configuration value that says do exponential back off and at, you know, this rate, and do up to, you know, retry this up to 8 times or 10 times with this exponential back off pattern. And then once we're past that, we're just done. We've officially failed. We can't do anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Does there need to be any connection between the number retries and an exponential backoff? Like, if someone sets the number retries to 2, then it's not really worth doing exponential backoff. Although you could, it just, I guess it would be benign. Is that the way to think about it, or should we always, no matter what retries get set to, we should always do exponential backoff?
Yeah, I think that if you did, you know, a number for retries, a number for interval for a time base, and then after that's consumed, then move to the exponential backoff. That, you know, if it's a low number, like you said, it's just, you know, it could be irrelevant, but that's just the way that someone configured it. So the mechanism would be all the same.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Any other thoughts on this issue? Okay. The next one is 371. Seems pretty benign. Filed by you, Ian, for the interledger address prefix serializer. I think we actually already have code for this in the Java project that we just need to port back. Is that right, or does this actually need to be written?
I mean, that's already done and merged in. That's when I plugged this into the Java connector, Jackson was having all kinds of fits. And so I just wound up taking the same code that I put in the connector and backporting that into Quilt. So that should already be in master.
Oh, really? Okay. Maybe we just didn't. Did we just not close this ticket then?
Probably not, because I'm bad at closing tickets. I don't know if this should be, or I guess to concede my own ignorance about how we want to do things now that we're at 1.0, should this be closed once the pull request is merged, or should this be closed after the actual release is cut?
Good question. I'm open to either way, but my instinct is that we close it when it's like pushed to master, because as long as we mark it as version 1, when we, or you know, 1.0.2 or whatever this makes it into, we'll be able to see that and document it. So like leaving it open until like the actual patch release or the real artifact is released doesn't seem to offer a lot of value in my mind. It's actually more useful to like not see an open issue. Because like, for example, just now, I thought this was still something that needed to be done.
Cool. Okay, yeah, that sounds good to me. I just want, because before 1.0 was just, it didn't matter. Like, it was a little bit different, but that makes total sense to me. Apologies, I should have just tagged this with the proper release label so that was more clear, because it's still just pegged to 1.0 right now, and it should have gotten pegged to 1.0.2. So sorry about that.
Oh no, no worries. So I'm just going to put a link to the pull request here for posterity. Best kind of issue is the issue that you don't have to do any additional work on, because it's already done. So.
Just trying to leave you a nice surprise.
And I guess to your point, I don't have a 1.0 label, or a 1.0.2 label, so let me make that here. And I guess in terms of the labeling, like, let's see if it gets out of hand. So I just created a new label called 1.0.2. So this issue has both 1.0 and 1.0.2, sort of redundant, I guess. Maybe 1.0.2 is enough to know that it's in the 1.0, but if somebody were to want to say, what are all the things that are in 1.0, need to have both labels, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's fine.
Just edit this real quick. Cool. Let me see the other ones here. So the next one was something that Neil Hartner and I discovered while we were using Quilt in the Java connector. It's issue 373. It's a pretty minor thing, actually, but technically for an ILP over HTTP link, you don't necessarily need both of these setting objects. Sadush, I'm just seeing your comment. Looks like we came to the same conclusion as you did. Or no, did I click on this real quick? Yeah, okay. So 373 is pretty minor. I think we can do it in a way that, I don't know what you guys think. Like, we don't have a lot of adoption of Quilt at the moment, so technically, like, making those two fields optional is a breaking change. But it seems pretty minor. Like, it's going from not optional to optional, so, like, it would require somebody to refactor their code a little bit, but I actually think it's more of like a clarifying refactor. It's not like actually substantively changing the code. So I would vote to like put this into a 1.02 for those two reasons, but curious if anyone has any super strong objections to that on versioning grounds.
Do we maybe instead want to add the annotation for deprecated for this temporarily and then remove it in like 1.0.2 or something in case we're worried about someone already using the library and breaking it with this change?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good, I'm not aware of anyone besides us in the Java connector using the library at the moment. Or maybe like, you know, it's just been us on the calls this far and the 1.0 is pretty new, but it is a good habit to get into in general. So we could do that.
If I just click on the used by option on top, which GitHub shows us, mm-hmm. It looks like someone from longchain.tech/crosschain is using it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so I don't know. Do we maybe just want to like reach out to them and say, hey, we are going to make a breaking change? Please update it if you want to. Like, just drop them a friendly mail.
Possibly, yeah. All right. I guess like better would be to just deprecate it and somehow figure out a way to support both.
Yeah, I think we can. We should probably deprecate it and say we're gonna remove this completely in 1.0.3 or something, and wait to see if someone complains.
I like that. So I just put a comment in 373 if you guys want to take a look. And feel free to make your own comments if you have more thoughts there. Okay, the last one is the stream server secret generator. This was filed by me yesterday. And basically, I have a use case where I need the secret generator to be something other than what the default is. And so this is pretty small. I think we can do it in a backwards compatible way by just adding another constructor. Basically, when a stream receiver or an SPSP receiver is generating a shared secret, it's using this like kind of magic string that you can see there in the ticket. Like here in the Zoom. And so just having the ability to change it is useful. And I think this could definitely go in a 1.02. There's no breaking, backward breaking thing here necessarily. So should be fine without any deprecation. Okay, that's all that I've tagged in 1.0. Actually, had a different developer reach out about issue 375, which was kind of interesting. His name is Mike. Put that in the chat here too. And I think the idea here was Mike's working on a project that uses Spring, and there is this concept of, like, you could think of it like a Spring module or a Spring project. So he gave an example of, like, Spring Cloud Console. So if you're using console in an app, you can pretty much just pull down this library that, like, works really well with Spring. So it might have, you know, existing beans defined, and, you know, a lot of times you can just, like, put one annotation in your config file, like at enable Spring console, and it will sort of auto configure itself and just sort of work with default values. And so the ask here was something similar for Quilt. The more I think about this, like, we could even extrapolate this to the Java connector. Like, you could imagine a Spring annotation called at enable Java connector that just basically turns a Spring Boot application into a connector with some, you know, known defaults. Anyway, it's kind of an interesting ask. I'm kind of in two camps because I like to use Spring in such a way that it is not doing a lot of, like, magic behind the scenes. Like, I like to kind of build my own config files and, like, sort of configure everything. But on the other hand, for somebody that's not really intimately knowledgeable about a connector, something like this could be pretty useful, like, as a simple config. Other than that, there's a bunch of other things that are, you know, either overtly tagged 1.1 because they're very breaking, or we're not quite sure, like, either they're not urgent, or we're not quite sure, like, how to make them work or what the design should be. So if anyone sees anything in there that they want to accelerate into, you know, something like a 1.03 or a 1.04, make a comment in there or bring it up now or one of the calls.
David, I'm sorry if this was discussed before, but can we take a look at issue 368 and 369? I think we can actually go ahead and close them, but I wanted to hear kind of like what all of you thought about it.
Oh, yeah. So for 368, the only thing left to do is to delete the fixture from Quilt and load it from... probably load it from GitHub, like directly from the RFC's repo. And the prime reason to do that is that if the test harness in the RFC's repo got edited or a new test was added, it wouldn't get missed. The downside of that is if it does get added and it fails, then our build will start breaking without us knowing. So open to hearing counterpoints here.
So do you kind of like want to make a network request and fetch the entire JSON file and then run the tests on that fixture? Like for every test that we do?
That'd be like the simplest thing. Maybe there are some tricks we could play with Git to, like, I don't know. I'm not savvy enough in Git to know if this is even possible, but like somehow mapping that folder into our repo. But yeah, the simplest would be like make a network request and grab that file. It does make our build potentially a little more brittle. So like, I'm definitely open to let's not do that and keep an eye on the RFC test harness.
Or if there is a way in which we can have like a separate repository for all the test fixtures that the RFC can link to, we could probably ask all the IntelliJ implementations to use the test fixtures as a submodule and then do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I think the idea is that all the projects would use this, would use the test harness or the, that artifact in the RFC's repo. Whether we all do it together or not, I guess doesn't really matter. Like for Quilt, we can, we don't have to be perfectly aligned with the other projects.
Okay, probably makes sense.
But I guess what, does anyone, Neil or Ian, do you guys have opinions on sort of a best practice here? Like the trade-off is loosely, we might not notice that the RFC test harness got updated versus making a remote call, whatever system's building, the server needs to be connected to a network probably in order to pass. Which actually feels a little suboptimal to me now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I don't know.
I mean, we have tests that, I guess it depends on if it's worried about having net, internet access at all or just that particular server. I would think it's probably okay. I mean, unless there's something inherently like unstable about where that RFC is hosted or the test harness. But I don't know.
I'm just, so a lot of Quilt was built on an airplane.
Yeah.
Because it was my side project for a long time. And so.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, that's what I mean is if it's the question of, do we want to make Quilt buildable if you aren't online? Like at all. And that's fair.
What about, I mean, I suppose if we had a Git submodule, that would be local technically on an airplane. Is that, I don't know, I'm thinking of Kiefer's project where he had some submodules and it was sort of
he regretted it.
Yeah,
I think it didn't work.
I mean, I'd either say make that test easy to skip if like, because if you're working on the airplane, you're probably not too worried about, I must run all the tests.
Right.
But some of them now have to reach out to, well, I guess if you run it already, but they would try to reach out to say Maven or, mm-hmm. or Docker Hub to get assets. So I would go with what's simplest, and then if it becomes a problem, we figure something out.
Sorry.
Are you guys talking about tests that require like internet connectivity or multiple server components?
Yeah, in this case, if we implement this issue to run the unit test, actually, it's going to have to reach out to GitHub and download this JSON file. So if you don't have internet connectivity, then your like laptop or your computer wouldn't be able to get that file, and the test would fail.
Got it.
Yeah, I mean, we could just check it into the project and then have something as part of the build that
does it compare?
That looks to see if it's changed, and maybe that only runs on Circle, not necessarily locally.
That's a good idea. Okay, so just making a note here. Okay, so unless an objection, we'll just build a simple script in the CI in Circle to check nightly if that file changed. Otherwise, we'll just keep this local file. Sudish, you had said 369 as well. Let me open that one.
Yeah, 369.
Yeah, this was filed by me. So basically, basically what happened is so all of the check styles were ultimately sourced from Google with like one minor change for the line length. So I had done that a while ago on this project that's linked in this ticket. And then when I went in to update it, I noticed that a bunch of, well, one like check style was configured in that project to fail on warning, but it wasn't. It was letting all the warnings pass. And so it looked like I had misconfigured that project, and I think some of those misconfigurations were brought into Quilt. But then Sudish, you've done a lot of work to like fix check style. So I think the thrust of this ticket is just to like look at the check style config on that project. There's just a few minor like setting changes and like configuration changes, and see if we want to bring those into Quilt. If we do, then we, you know, it's a simple PR. If not, we can just close this ticket.
I don't think there are any differences in both the check styles from what I've taken a look at, like other than the obvious ones like name and so on. The rest of the content that needs to be checked and like the way the check style needs to behave is kind of the same, is exactly the same from what I remember.
Yeah, the check style of the file itself should be the same, but the POM configuration is just slightly different.
Yeah. I see. Okay. So
for example, the regexs on the excluded sources. In the crypto conditions project, I was unable to get check style to ignore the generated immutables. So it would warn a bunch on a few classes. But
I see. Okay.
Using this new, that different regex seemed to work, but I think I also had to, I'm just kind of scanning through here to remember what I had to do. Maybe I can just put I'll put the pull request in. I'll put a link to it just so whoever picks up this ticket can take a look. Yeah. Here is the, I'll just put a link in that issue, Sudish. Sounds like you might take a look at this one.
Yeah, sounds good. I'll take another look at this one and then maybe we can close this.
And I'm just gonna say to call out the X's for excludes. Cool. Okay. Well, we're almost out of time. I don't have anything more on the formal agenda. Is there anything else anyone wanted to bring up before we part ways? Cool. Well, thanks all for participating, and as always, happy to have participants. If you see some simple issues and you have some spare time, by all means, make a PR. We'd love to have more people involved. And if there's questions or whatever, feel free to reach out to me or anyone else on the call. We're on the Interledger forum and Slack. And there's also the Quilt mailing list as well. So thanks again, and we will see you in 2 weeks. Bye.
Yeah.